You are listening to the Forgotten News Podcast.
But before we begin, here are a couple of other podcasts that we think you should try.
Hello, I'm Steffi, the host of One Eye Open, my very own true crime podcast. I write, research, and produce each episode from my fancy little room here in England. Join me as I delve deeply into mysterious murders and painful punishments. The terrible tales are real, and although dark, I'm sure they'll appeal. I've been described as the Mary Poppins of true crime, but you'll need more than a spoonful of sugar to help these crimes go down. I'd recommend a gin and tonic, a large one. If you like your true crime served with ice, lemon, and a touch of class, then come and find me, Steffi, on my podcast One Eye Open. I'll be waiting for you.
Hi, my name is Nick.
I'm Brandon.
We are the hosts of the Tenish Podcast, where every week we cover a different top Tenish list. We cover lists such as the highest grossing films of all time, the best selling musicians of all time,
the sexiest mogwais, the richest leprechauns,
all this and more we cover on the Tenish Podcast.
I had more.
You can find us on all podcast players, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. All you gotta do is search for 10ISH Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Tenish Pod. And Brandon, what will we do if the listeners don't check out our podcast?
We'll cut.
Don't make us cut. Listen to the Tenish Podcast. Bye.
Welcome to the Forgotten News Podcast. This is your window to hear true stories from long ago. Stories that once made headlines. Stories that people thought would be unforgettable. Yet those stories were soon lost in the sands of time or were buried deep in the dustbin of history. In this podcast, we shake off the sand and dust from those stories and share them here with you, as fresh as the day they were first told.
And now, here's your hosts.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to episode 27 of the Forgotten News Podcast. My name is Kit.
My name is Jim.
And thank you for listening. This episode is being released in February, and here in the U.S., February is Black History Month. Although there are a growing number of communities, schools, and other institutions that have renamed it African American History Month. But since most people use the phrase Black History Month, that is the designation that we are going to use also. There is a conspiracy theory that has been floating around since at least the 1980s, that white people chose February to be Black History Month because it is the shortest month of the year, and because February is a month that most people associate with cold days and bad weather. We will now tell you for a fact that this ugly rumor is nonsense. In fact, it is worse than nonsense, because it is not only false, but actually hides the real truth.
I remember, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, in the wintertime, I happened to hear a speech by the late comedian and Black civil rights activist Dick Gregory. And in case you aren't familiar with him, Dick Gregory was a friend and colleague of Dr. Martin Luther King in the 1960s. He passed away in 2018. Anyway, during his speech, he got onto the topic of Black History Month. And in a few minutes, It was crystal clear that he believed in the conspiracy theory that February is Black History Month because it is the worst month of the year, and that's why it was given to Black people. At first, I thought he was kidding, but I soon realized that he absolutely believed it. Now, for me personally, it was the first time that I had ever heard that particular conspiracy theory. But over the years since then, I have discovered that quite a few people believe it, even though there is not a shred of truth to it.
February was designated for Black History Month in 1926 by Dr. Carter Woodson, who had created the observance.
Now, at first, between 1926 and 1969, it was just a week, Black History Week. It was celebrated during the second week of February. However, in 1970, the African-American members of the faculty at Kent State University in Ohio, in conjunction with the Black Students Association, proposed that Black History Week be expanded to Black History Month. The university adopted the proposal, and the idea quickly spread across the United States. And now, probably everywhere in the U.S., February is Black History Month. But getting back to the question of where did the entire commemoration start, and exactly who was Dr. Carter Woodson, the man who decided on February in the first place?
Dr. Woodson was an African-American man who was a professional historian, author, and journalist. He chose February to coincide with the birthday month of President Abraham Lincoln and the 19th century Black civil rights leader and author Frederick Douglass. Lincoln is most famous for leading the United States to victory in the American Civil War that took place between 1861 and 1865, along with issuing the Emancipation Proclamation and spearheading the successful campaign to pass the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which together effectively ended and permanently prohibited the existence of slavery in the United States. But believe it or not, only a few years later, in the late 1870s through the early 1940s, tens of thousands of American citizens were effectively transformed into slaves. Notwithstanding the prohibitions and promises of the Constitution, within the very same states of the American South that had been defeated in the Civil War. Basically, the local criminal justice system was used to arrest and imprison people for any alleged crime, whether real or imaginary. They were then forced to work on privately owned farms, plantations, mines, factories, and other workplaces, on the basis of contracts between the state and literally anyone who wanted to purchase the labor of prisoners. These prisoners were almost entirely Black, but the system would also occasionally snare a few white people who were usually either dirt poor or local troublemakers of one kind or another. None of the prisoners were paid.
In the 21st century, this incredible situation was almost totally forgotten by most people, both Black and white, until the year 2008, when a book was published called Slavery by Another Name, written by Douglas Blackman, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. It became a New York Times bestseller and was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction. A few years later, in 2012, it was adapted into a film that was featured on the PBS television network.
Hundreds of thousands of people across the American South were arrested, convicted, and put to work in this way. Nearly all of them had been found guilty of minor crimes that, in reality, they were innocent of committing.
All it took was anything remotely resembling a crime. And in incident after incident, an arrest would result in a substantial fine. And if the accused person did not have the money to pay the fine, he or she would quickly end up in jail or prison.
It was not called slavery. However, for all intents and purposes, that is what it was. Because in approximately 90% of these cases, these were Black people who had simply been living their lives or who were making money in a way that the local white people didn't like. It was then commonly called being uppity. And their real crime was just exactly that, being uppity, regardless of what was written on paper in the courthouse.
And as you will soon learn, Mr. Blackman was not the first person to bring this situation to the attention of the public. For example, on this episode, we will feature two interconnected newspaper articles from the 19th century, in which, beginning with the headlines, it is recognized that the courts and the prison system were being used to randomly reimpose slavery. However, because of the sensitive nature of this topic, we feel that a warning is necessary so that our listeners have an opportunity to decide if they want to continue to listen or not.
Warning. On this episode, we will give you a first-hand glimpse into what life was like through the example of a group of about 5 dozen women prisoners, nearly all African Americans, who were being forced to work as agricultural laborers on a privately owned plantation in the state of Georgia in 1893. The story will be told by guest narrator from news articles exactly as they were published at the time. Please be advised that some parts of the reporting use words or phrases that could be considered to be condescending or even racist in the present day. So, we apologize in advance. Listeners, if you think that hearing about this incident could possibly cause you to have a negative emotional reaction, then this episode might not be something you should listen to. In addition, the story that is being featured is definitely not recommended for children, since it could be upsetting or even frightening to young ears. Parental discretion is strongly advised.
And with all that having been said,
on with the show. Our story begins in 1893 in Elbert County, Georgia, which is in the northeast portion of the state, near the border with South Carolina. The story will be told entirely as it was reported in news articles from the time. We will now turn the story over to our guest narrator. However, because we believe that this story is extremely important for people to hear, we will not disclose her identity until afterward, so as not to distract from the story itself.
The Atlanta Constitution, July 19th, 1893. The headline reads, Female Convicts Escape. Subheadline, 5 women take to the river near Savannah. 5 female convicts have escaped from the Maddox prison farm in the past 3 weeks, and the rest of the 60 prisoners there are demoralized. The camp is situated in Elbert County, near the Savannah River. All the female convicts are sent to this place. Two of the women ran away while working in the fields. One of them had been serving a life sentence for murder. They were tracked by dogs to the river, where all trace of them was lost. The three other women escaped by prying up some boards in the floor. One of the convicts was an 18-year-old colored girl, sentenced to life in prison. These women were also tracked by dogs as far as the river. All those who escaped had prior experience in working on flatboats on the river. It is thought that friends outside the camp must have assisted them by obtaining boats, which the women knew how to navigate.
Almost exactly 1 month later, another article was published following up on the original story.
The Atlanta Constitution, August 13, 1893. The headline reads simply, Women Convicts. Subheadlines: Georgia's female prisoners laboring in the fields. They work as male convicts do. White and black women in the work gangs. The worst form of slavery. Three of the five female convicts who escaped from the Maddox farm in Elbert County 10 days ago are still at large. Two of them were caught in South Carolina and locked up overnight in a tottering sort of a jail. The next morning, the building was found broken all to pieces. One of the women who had been locked up was the Leah girl from Floyd County. She is only 17 years old and is a light-skinned colored girl who is very pretty. Captain Maddox leases the prisoners to work on his plantation. Yesterday, he wrote to Colonel Jones, the warden of the penitentiary, that he is hopeful of capturing all of the women. He is sure that they have not gotten far out of the neighborhood and believes that they are being hidden. In the past, he has always captured any who have escaped, until these last three broke away. Maddox's plantation is one of the most beautiful in the state. It comprises 6,000 acres along the Savannah River. About half of the place is under cultivation. Captain Maddox has been working convicts for only 18 months. He has made arrangements with all of the other farms which had leased prisoners to take all the female convicts off of their hands. He has to pay the state's lease price for each prisoner, which is $13 per year, and also pays a bonus to the other farms from which he had purchased their prisoner leases. No male convicts are worked at the Maddox plantation. According to Captain Maddox, quote, "Women bring just as much as men. One, the few instances in which female labor brings as much as male for the same kind of work. These women get to be as expert as men. They plow and dig and make a good day's work at anything they are put at." Unquote. Captain Maddox plants cotton, wheat, corn, oats, and grass. He has a fine grist mill on the river and makes a great deal of flour. The women go to work at sunrise and go back to their quarters at sunset. Each woman has her mule, and they take great pride in their mules. Free labor attends to the stock, and the women have nothing to do with feeding them. In the early morning, the mules are brought out, and the women lead them up to a rock or log and jump on their backs and ride to the field. The women are not shackled, nor are they fastened to a chain as the men are at other camps. There is a guard for every 10 women. A gang of women will start off plowing, and a guard will follow. Another gang goes behind hoeing, and there will be a guard with these women. The guards carry pistols in their belts. However, they do not carry rifles or shotguns, as do the guards who follow the male convicts. Captain Maddox has given the women a little more liberty than some of them appreciated. Five have disappeared within the last month, but two are back in the stockade. When the work is near their quarters, the convicts are taken there for dinner. But when they are a mile or more away, dinner is carried to them. On returning from work at sunset, the prisoners go to supper. Each one has her seat at a table, and the meal is before the plate awaiting her. After supper, the convicts go to a building where they sleep. They have an abundance of water and access to it. The women all wear a striped gown throughout the day. Each prisoner has a cot and a change of clothes beside it. The favorite headgear is a soft, round hat that is like a man's. This year, Captain Maddox has averaged about 63 female convicts at his camp. Of those, only 2 were white women, and they are the only white women who have been in the prison system for a long time. These 2 are Pearl Pendergast and Alice White, both of whom were residents of Savannah. They were convicted for enticing a white girl from home for immoral purposes. Pendergast was a noted character in her town. She was lewd, but had good traits. On one occasion, when there was a riot, she assisted the policeman. She has been on good behavior since landing in prison. Some time ago, she professed religion at some of the meetings held at the camp. She was baptized by a white preacher and was entered on the membership list of a white Baptist church. She is employed at sewing, and she never has to leave the quarters. She helps make the clothing for the prisoners and keeps their limited and unfashionable wardrobe in repair. Pearl says that she is happy, and she does not have a hard time of it at all. She has grown fat and is in better health than when she was a free woman. Alice White was not so much disposed to be orderly, and she was put to work in the field as punishment. She watched for her chance and ran off, but was captured and taken back. Many of the Negro women are as strong as men. They can dig a well or crush rocks and handle a flatboat skillfully. Last spring, a canal had to be repaired, and the women did the work, and they did it right. Their newfound knowledge of the flatboats is useful in escaping. The women run to the river, and in that way they can throw the dogs from their trail. They go up or down the river on a boat, and the dogs cannot tell what direction they have gone. Speaking of escapes, a tough Negro woman broke away one day when she was about to be whipped and ran under a house. She disappeared very suddenly, and the guards knew that she could not be far away. They searched closely for her, and she, realizing that she would be caught, called to a woman who was washing nearby to tell her what she must do. She was told that she should run and jump into the well. The fugitive slipped out and, unobserved, ran to the well and jumped down. The dogs were put on the trail, and they ran straight to the well and would not leave. A man was sent down in the well. The woman was nearly covered with water. She would not give up and fought like a tiger. She was strong and whipped the guard, almost drowning him. He cried for help, and another man was sent down. The woman turned on him, and the 2 men had all they could do to keep her from drowning them. Finally, they got a rope around her body, and she was hauled up with the water draining from her clothes in streams. Captain Maddox pays a penalty of $200 for any escape if the prisoner is not captured in 60 days, the same amount for a woman as if it had been a man. Sunday is rest day. The women get breakfast and this time of year go down to the canal for a dip. They have preaching later but do not have to go. Nearly all of the women like to attend church services, but they are not so demonstrative about their religion as the men are. Male convicts are often very religious. Many of them are exhorters or shouters. But the women do not say much about religion. Most of the female prisoners were convicted of bad crimes and have long sentences. They are usually in for murder or arson or some other serious offense. The terms of the women are longer, as a rule, than those of the men. Captain Maddox has a beautiful home. It is an old mansion with broad double piazzas, white columns, and green blinds. The grounds are picturesque. Tall trees shade the residence, and arches of evergreens cover the walks from his house to the road. He is a kindly, hospitable gentleman, and his guests are always charmingly entertained.
And that brings us to the end of our story, as it was reported at the time. Unfortunately, there was no follow-up article that we could find, so this is all of the information that we have. And all that I can say is, wow, that was kind of a depressing story. But it is what it is.
This unbelievable situation had some crazy twists and turns over the years. For example, during World War I, when many, perhaps most, adult black men had been drafted into the army, then were sent to Europe, they usually arranged for part of their military paycheck to be mailed to their wives or mothers or sweethearts. This enabled a large number of black women in the American South to quit their jobs as maids or cooks or laundry workers for white people. This result was not only very upsetting to those white people, but in some communities, there were attempts to pass laws requiring adult black women to get jobs or be charged with vagrancy. However, none of those proposals were ever passed anywhere because those cities were soon warned by legal experts that you could not have such a law, even as a wartime emergency law, unless it also covered white women.
Wow. I am just blown away. There is an old saying, history is no gentleman.
Ain't that the truth?
Well, I have nothing else to say as far as the story on this episode. How about you?
Nothing much, other than to mention that this misuse of the criminal justice system seems to have faded out for the most part in the early 1940s. For various reasons that we, unfortunately, don't have the time to go into on this episode. But for anyone who is interested in doing a deep dive into all of this, you should probably just get a copy of the book Slavery by Another Name, written by Douglas Blackman. You can get it on Amazon or maybe your local bookstore, and probably your local library will have a copy.
Yep. But now, before we move on, we want to give an enormous thanks to our fabulous narrator. So take a bow and tell our listeners all about yourself.
Julie Hoverson, creator of 19 Nocturne Boulevard and Atomic Julie's Galactic Bedtime Stories. Available at 19nocturneboulevard.com, that's 19 Nocturne Boulevard, and through the RSS feed at 19nocturne.libsyn.com, that's 19 spelled out.
And now, we will move on to the latest edition of our ongoing segment, Police Blotter and Court News, in which we bring you short stories of small-time crooks and other random folks who, for one reason or another, ended up in the teeth of the justice system a century or more ago. And this particular segment will be narrated for you exactly as it was written in a column published in the Cleveland Plain Dealer on July 27, 1855, in the words of the anonymous reporter who wrote it. Now, just in case you're a new listener, I will mention a few quick things that our regular listeners already know. In this segment, You will hear about various random arrests, the events that led to those arrests, and the aftermath in the courtroom. Next, at any time that you hear about money in this segment, such as, for example, in regard to fines, please be aware that $1 in 1855 is the equivalent of approximately $30 in the present day.
So, in other words, the various amounts of money that you will hear about in this segment were obviously worth a lot more back then than they would be in the present day.
And with that fact in mind, I will give you a heads up that money will play a major role on this particular segment.
Also, keep in mind that for nearly all of the people who will be mentioned, it was very likely the only time that their names were printed in a newspaper, other than perhaps their obituary.
Oh, well. One more thing. Practically all of these people are somebody's great-great-grandfather or grandmother. Maybe even yours. Finally, before we begin the segment, we will give a short warning to our listeners. First, we want to give some context for new listeners. If you open a typical book of American history, it will usually tell you facts and stories that are from the main streets and avenues of yesteryear. But in contrast, the stories that you will hear on this police blotter and court news segment are essentially a slice of life from the dimly lit side streets and back alleys of the past. So, for that reason, you will hear mentions of theft, drunkenness, and prostitution. We report these crimes exactly the way they were written. Now, listeners, if you think that hearing about any of these things could possibly cause you to have a negative emotional reaction, then this segment might not be something that you should listen to. So just skip ahead roughly 7 minutes from now, and it will be over.
Approximately. It could be a little less or a little more.
Parental discretion is strongly advised, since there are some portions of this segment which young ears probably should not be listening to. And so, with all of that having been said, here we go.
Police blotter and court news.
Municipal Court, Cleveland, Ohio, June 27, 1855.
John Flint was arrested yesterday for stealing an earthen churn from a warehouse. He says he was slightly intoxicated and very thirsty. He saw the churn. It reminded him of buttermilk. He wanted some, but was disappointed and decided to sell it and get some. Accordingly, he took it across the street and was engaged in negotiating for it when he was caught. He was sent to jail for 5 days on bread and water to meditate on the pursuit of such luxuries. Thomas Odenbaugh got into a cab last evening and was carried to a brothel operated by Anne Van Tassel, where he drank considerably and slept less. He complained that morning of the loss of $50 of his money and receiving in the place of it only a $50 advertising card resembling a banknote. The proprietor was arrested and fined $50 for keeping a house of prostitution. In addition, a nymph with a romantic name of Ida Florence was fined $10 for being a resident of the house. Odenbaugh was arrested for going into the house, but his case is not yet disposed of. A woman appeared in the court this morning to complain that her daughter, a girl of 14 years, had gone last night at a late hour to the room of an actor at his boarding house, and that she had there been found disguised in boy's clothes in company with the actor. She believed the girl had been enticed away and seduced, but the judge could find no proof that any law had been violated by the actor and discharged him.
The court is adjourned.
And that brings us to the end of the Police Blotter and Court News of July 27th, 1855. We hope you enjoyed having this brief opportunity to take a glance into the dusty and musty side of life in the 19th century. And, as usual, we certainly hope that none of these people were your great-great-grandma or grandpa. And now, we would like to thank our lovely guest narrator and also the terrific guest voices for this Police Blotter and Court News segment.
Many thanks to everyone.
So take a bow and tell our listeners a little about yourself.
Hi, this is Erin Plime from Crime Crazy Podcast. Each week on Crime Crazy, Diana Secon and I prove that though we know nothing about our legal system, we're still crazy for a good true crime story. Come and listen to Season 4, now playing on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or your podcast catcher of choice. Remember, call your people and don't end up on next week's episode.
Hi, I'm Cambo from True Crime Island. Grab a beer and pull up a deck chair for True Crime every week on your favorite podcatcher. And as I always say, don't forget to delete your browser history. Boom fagalunga.
Hi, I'm Minna from True Crime Finland, a podcast about Finnish crimes and criminals, straight from the land of a thousand lakes.
Okay, listeners, at this point in the show, we are just going to say we hope that you feel a little more educated after hearing our featured story, and also that you possibly had a little chuckle from our Police Blotter segment.
I can't think of any other podcast that would bring you stories like these. That's one thing you can count on with this podcast.
I am now going to move on and make a small request to all of you who are now hearing my voice. Listeners, if you love me, and also, Jim, of course, then please go to iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and leave a rating and review for the Forgotten News podcast. It only takes a minute, and it really helps us out. It helps to push up our rankings in the iTunes chart, and it often prompts other people to listen to the show. But if you want to prove that you really, really, really love me, then only leave 5-star reviews. Pretty please? And I better not find out that you're leaving reviews for other podcasts, but not for this one. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? Why are you questioning me? Just do what I'm telling you. Simply march your fingers over to iTunes and look for the Forgotten News podcast in the search box. Then leave a 5-star rating and review. Just do it, and I promise to love you forever. Thank you so much.
Other than that, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, either send us an email at forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow the Forgotten News Podcast on Facebook and Twitter.
Please feel free to use any of those methods to interact with us.
We're always thrilled to hear from any of our listeners.
Be sure to send me some happy tweets and messages on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @KitKaren, spelled KitKaren. Maybe you'll even hear back from me. And then scoot over to my side gig podcast, Whispered True Stories, to hear mysteries and true crime stories told entirely in whisper.
And as usual, we will thank Kevin MacLeod for the music used on this episode and freesound.com www.thefergottennews.org for the sound effects. There will be specific credits for them in the show notes, and also for any other guest audio on this episode.
I guess this is the end.
Okay. And as far as I know, that's everything for this episode. So, goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
I sure hope that Abe Lincoln and Frederick Douglass both had nice birthdays this month up in heaven.
I couldn't agree more. Happy birthday, Abe. Happy birthday, Fred. And I hope that everyone learned a lot during Black History Month 2019.
And remember, history is no mystery.
Thank you for listening to the Forgotten News Podcast. You will now be returned back to the present day, and we hope that we can count on you to join us for our next episode.
It is one thing to pay lip service to the Constitution, and another thing to abide by its specific provisions.